had said a few things in our introduction last week. And basically everyone voted for learning from the text. I wasn't sure if you meant to read and translate the text. The Sefer is Habayit HaYehudi by Rav Eliyahu Kitov. I think that being that people don't have the text in front of them, it's better if I just summarize the text instead of reading inside. If you all want to get the Sefer, I could get it for you. But for now, we'll go this way. If you think that it's better reading inside, and we can photocopy it. Yeah, we can photocopy pages. Let me know at the end of class how you think we should go. For now, we'll review what we discussed last week a little bit. We mentioned that Ish plus Isha equals Adam. That the man, when he was created, was supposed to be man and woman together. The concept Adam is a high level of humanity, and that level is only attained when we have a man and a woman together. We mentioned, and we'll discuss at greater length probably next week, the Gemara, Sharui Belo Isha, if a person is without a wife, how many things he's lacking. And we discussed that the word bait means a receptacle. Bait is something that can accept blessing. And that the woman is really the receptacle, ishto hi beito, the wife, the woman is the receptacle that a man gets for blessing. We're going to discuss why a man needs a receptacle. The simple understanding is that a man can't have a child without a wife. But there's much more to it than that. That's just one element where we see it very poignantly, the concept that a man needs a wife for his blessings. But we're going to discuss at greater length other aspects where the wife is really the source of blessing for the man. And obviously the man for the wife. And we discussed, Ish v'isha zachu shchina binem. When we have a man and a woman, if they merit, then the shchina is between them. Rav Eliyahu Kitov begins his sefer with a chapter called Da et Beitecha, know your home. And he begins with a quote from the Gemara in Sota. The Gemara says, V'sam derech arenu b'yesha Elokim. The prophet says, he who places a path before himself, I'll show him the redemption of God. So the Gemara says, don't read the verse as saying V'sam derech, he who places a path before him, with a sin, but rather visham derech, with a shin. Sham means he who evaluates. He who evaluates his paths, he will see the redemption of God. And the Gemara says, kol hasham ochotav, all who evaluate their ways in this world, they will merit and see the redemption of God. That's how the Gemara understands that it's supposed to be hasham, he who evaluates his path. And Rav Eliyahu Kitov begins his sefer with this. I think he's telling us that we have to evaluate the ways in which we're going, similar to the introduction we had last week. We have to evaluate what we're headed towards in our home.
What is the source of that
again? It's a Gemara in Sota, Daf Hei. The Gemara quotes the Pasuk, V'sam derech arenu b'yesha Elokim. I don't remember which Navi that's in, but Sota, Daf Hei. There are many things that the previous generation enjoyed that our generation does not. They seem to have a zest for life, and they seem to know how to enjoy life, and when we look at our generation, it seems like our generation is missing something. Our generation is seeking something. Our generation is seeing psychologists and psychiatrists at a rate that no other generation has gone to. So you could say, yeah, that's because of the wealth, and you have a lot of psychologists on the market. But there's probably more to it than that. Technology has advanced, and on a materialistic level, the quality of life has gone up, but on a different level, the quality of life has gone down. And everyone is seeking and searching to find how to improve their quality of life. What is it that the world is missing? Rav Eliyahu Kitov says that the basic thing that's lacking in the world is moderation. Knowing how much of each thing to take, to do, the skill of knowing how to enjoy life with moderation, with the proper balance. And then, if a person does things with the proper balance, enjoyment in this world is something that his creator is happy with, and it is ultimately good for himself. People think that to be Jewish, you have to be ascetic. Deprive yourself of everything. The Gemara says that a person is going to have to answer up in the courts in heaven. He's going to have to answer for every thing that his eyes saw, and he did not eat of it. He did not partake of that enjoyment. Meaning every food that you could enjoy halachically, and you didn't, in heavens they're going to take you to task over that. So that seems to say, okay, party time, right? We know that the Gemara gives us guidelines as to how to enjoy this world. We're supposed to enjoy this world, just in the proper way. Rav Eliyahu Kitov brings a parable. He says it's similar to two men who want to prepare a meal. One is a connoisseur. He knows the best ways how to prepare foods. He's a chef. When he comes into the kitchen, he knows how much yeast to put in the flour. He knows how much spices to put with which condiment. And he knows which wines go best with which foods. He prepares a meal. You come in, you see a meal fit for a king. He knows which course to serve first, which course to serve second, what's good as an after course, which flavors go well together. You see a beautiful meal. Someone who eats that meal, he's going to have a wonderful meal. He's going to eat the way he should. He's going to drink the way he should. And at the end of the meal, he'll bless the one who prepared this wonderful meal. On the other hand, someone who has no understanding on how to make food, he's going to take dough and put dough in the oven and yeast on the other side in the oven. And he's going to take out two different types of bread. They both won't be tasty. He's going to take the spices and put them into the fruits. He's going to take the salt and put it into the wine. He's going to drink a small amount of wine and a large amount of vinegar. A guy like that is going to walk out of the meal. His teeth are going to hurt him. He's going to feel bad. His stomach's going to hurt him. And he's not only going to be disgusted with the meal, he's going to curse whoever prepared such a meal for him. Rav Eliyahu Kitov says that's life. Life is a meal. We have to know how much flavoring to put in. We have to know how to prepare the foods. We have to know how to enjoy life. If we think we're just going to approach life and everything out of it without any preparations, then we'll end up like that guy who approaches the kitchen without knowing what to do in the kitchen. There are people who walk through life with open eyes, and they learn the laws of life and the foundations of life, and they become experts at living, and then they know how to enjoy life. They know even when things are tough, even when the weights of life weigh down on them, actual living is a pleasure for people who know how to walk the ways of life. And there are those who go through life with their eyes closed. They're constantly seeking and trying to grab every pleasure that could come their way. That's the way the world is running today. Look around you, that's advertisement, and that's the way everyone's working. Everyone's trying to grab every enjoyment they could get out of life. And then people just stumble through life. And even the pleasures that a person should have enjoyed in life, he won't get the enjoyment and satisfaction that he could have gotten out of them.
This is written like 100 years ago?
This sefer, Ishu Beito, was written about 45 years ago, 50 years ago. It is probably the book, the first sefer that was written addressing the needs of building a home. Today you have hundreds of books on the market. This is probably the first. Rav Eliyahu Kitov was an educator. He was a teacher, taught girls.
And he
wrote fascinating books in a way that's easy to understand. So going back to what we began the chapter with, we have to evaluate the way in which we're going. Before we begin going on the path of life and going on the path of building a home, we have to know what's a good way and what's not such a good way. How do we reach true happiness? And how does a person watch himself from going off to the side? A person has to choose the right path and try to go on it. When is the beginning of a person's path? When does a person begin in life? So one could say that when a person gets married, that's when a person really starts his path in life. Until then, we're preparing. We're building our personalities. When a man makes a pact with a woman, and together they start building their home and sustaining their lives and their future, At that hour, when they make that pact, that's the beginning of the path of the man and the woman. Every step that a man takes, a person has to be careful. But this first step of the union, the marriage, has to be with extra care. The house that you're going to build, the family that you're going to plant, what are they? What's going to be the house that you build? What kind of family are you going to build, bring up? Anyone who knows to give a correct answer to that, and there's no one correct answer, but a proper answer to those questions. So when you have a picture of what kind of family and what kind of home you're going to build, then you have a greater chance of building that home and not leaving the boundaries, the confines of the carefulness that a person has to have in order to build that home. If a person knows where he's headed, then a person is going to be wise enough to find the way to get there. If a person wants to be certain that the way he's going is the right way, how does he know? There's a joke. You want to know what's right, ask a teenager. He always knows what's right. But the truth is, how do you know if the path you chose is right? So a person has to go to the wise men of the generations, and they're the ones who understand how our souls work, and they're the ones that gave us lessons as to how to build our homes. Chazal, our sages. The chapters of the Sefer are not only a summarization of Chazal's words, but they're words that are fit for those who said them and will be of assistance to those who hear them. This is Rav Eliyahu Kitov's introduction to the Sefer. I have to tell you that it's a weighty thing to give this class. I did everything I could to get out of it, to get someone else to give it. I'm going to try to add things to what Rav Eliyahu Kitov says. And I hope that what I say is correct. I prayed very strongly before I came here today that I won't say anything that's incorrect and that what I say is going to be understood correctly. I encourage everyone to further their knowledge and listen to other shiurim. If you know Hebrew, so then there are shiurim by Rav Simcha Cohen, and there's a book by Rav Simcha Cohen. And I'm going to do my best to tell you things that are correct, but I'm only human. I'm going to try to base what I say on Chazal, but a lot of what I'm going to say is also based on personal experience. I speak to couples. So let's begin. And now it's my part of the class. When we think of the foundations of the home, these are things I think have to be in the introduction to the learning of the Sefer. When we think of the foundations of the home, so a few things come to mind. Ahava, which can't be translated as love, but for lack of a better word, we're going to have to translate the word ahava as love.
Affection?
I don't think it could be translated as affection. I don't know of a word that gives true translation to the word ahava, but for now we'll translate it as love. Kavod, giving honor to one's spouse, back and forth, a husband to his wife and a wife to a husband. Ha'aracha, appreciation. Atzmayut, we'll call it autonomy. And yashrut, being straight, being truthful.
What was the second last one you said?
Atzmayut, autonomy. A person's being his own self. Now, we're going to discuss general rules for a home and a relationship between a man and his wife. And obviously, each relationship has its nuances.
What was the last point?
The last point we said was truthfulness. How do we express ahava? So, ahava can be expressed in many, many ways. Men think of big things, and they should also focus on little things. The most basic and most important thing that a woman wants to know is that she is the most cherished being in this world. We find even the Navi, when he describes his love to the Jewish people, he says, "Achati yoni tamati," my beloved one, my pigeon is one, is singular. How do we praise God? We say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Lokeinu, Hashem Echad. And the blessing that precedes it, the blessing that describes the introduction of unification of God, is Ahava Rabba or Ahavat Olam, the great love, and we're going to discuss that blessing at greater length. And God, when he speaks about the Jewish people, when he praises them, what does he say? Mikam Chayisrael. Who's like the Jewish people? There's no one like them. We mentioned that the Gemara says that there's nothing that a woman hates more than another woman. What does that mean? That means that if you want to get on your wife's nerves, walk into the house one evening and start praising a coworker who's a female. Now, Halacha says that if a person loses his wife, God forbid, so, under certain circumstances, we say out of honor to his wife, he has to wait three regalim, he has to wait almost a whole year before he remarries. But let's say he has young children in the house and he needs someone to take care of them. So he could get married right after the Shiva. He could get married almost right away. After a certain period of mourning, he could get married. So the Gemara says, what happens if a friend who hasn't seen him for a while, he hears that his wife passed away, and then he hears that he remarried, and he wants to console him, he wants to comfort him. So the Gemara says that he shouldn't dare walk into the house of the new wife and start comforting him for the loss of his first wife. That's halacha. You can't comfort a man over his first wife in front of his second wife. So you ask yourself, was she a barbarian? The woman died. What's she jealous of? The Gemara says it's not that way. Eni shamit kana ela beyerech haverta. A woman is always going to be jealous of another woman. And that's why we have to be extra careful in ensuring that our wives know that they are the most precious thing we have. And when we praise them, we have to make sure it's not, you cook this almost like my mother, or just better than my mother. She can't be compared to any other woman. A wife has to know always that she's number one. And it's not number one and there's a number two. She's in a category in and of itself. She's the only one. The man has a tendency to think of certain ways of expressing love, and women have a different way of expressing it and of accepting it. I always tell Hassanim, if you want to buy a girl a gift, so let's say your wife, you know she needs a pocketbook. So her birthday is coming up, you run from store to store to store looking at different pocketbooks, and start analyzing. This one's made of this leather. This one has this strap. This one has the special place for the change. You look at one, you look at the other, you look at the third. Start seeing which one's going to fit with the most clothes she has, with her shoes, with her hats. Then, assuming you understand to do all of this. Finally, after a month of investigating all the stores in the neighborhood, you choose one. And even though it's the most expensive one, you say, yeah, but this is exactly what she needs. So you buy it, but you only found it the day of her birthday, so you run to the store, you tell the guy, you got to give me a break, I need a better price, and the guy says, no, can do. And you try to haggle with him, you know you got to rush home, she's coming home from work, you want to have it for her, and the guy won't go down in price, and finally you pay him full price, more than any other pocketbook in town, and you see it, and you're amazed, you got the pocketbook that you think she's going to be overjoyed with. You run home, you hop into the car, you're zooming home, you want to get there before she gets home from work. As you pull in, she pulls into the driveway, and you hide it in the bag. You walk into the house, and you say, happy birthday, and you give her the pocketbook. And she looks at it. Oh, it's very nice. And what do you mean it's very nice? I went through all the stores in town. I looked at every single pocketbook there is. This is the most expensive pocketbook. Everything you ever needed is here. What do you mean it's very nice? Let's take a different scene. Wife brings her husband a gift for his birthday. So it's his birthday. He comes home. He sees a note on the kitchen table. So the note says all kinds of things, and then says, this is waiting for you in the living room. So he goes out to the living room, and there's another note. And that note says, there's something waiting for you in the bathroom, whatever. And then he goes from room to room until finally he finds a gift wrap gift, and he tears it open and he sees it and he looks at it and it's the wallet he wanted. So now he starts looking at the wallet and he says, this is amazing. It has a place for change. My change won't fall out. It has a place for my credit cards. Even my Tudat Zehut could fit. No wallet could fit my Tudat Zehut. Now, he starts looking at all the practical things, how great the wallet is. I can't believe you found a wallet like this. I've been looking for it my whole life. What's the difference? The difference is in detail.
The rhetorical question. It's process versus product.
Okay. Women have a great sense for detail. We appreciate it when they dress beautifully. When they wear earrings that match the hair cover, that match the dress, that match the shoes, that match the socks, that whatever. Then we appreciate it. When they decorate a house, we appreciate it. So we have to know to appreciate it when we give them a gift. When we want to express our love, we have to know that we can't do it on male terms. We have to do it on female terms. I always tell Hasanim, if you want to get your Kala a gift, so don't think like a boy. As a boy, you think, what's most practical? So you'll run around town finding for something that's going to be exactly right. And you'll think about the price, and the gift wrap won't make much of a difference to you, and the note won't make much of a difference to you. And when you get a gift, the same thing. You tear open the gift wrap, you look at what's inside. Right? You wonder, well, why'd she bother with this? She has nothing better to do with her time? No, that's her investment. That's her expression of love. But she expects to get it back on the same language. That means that when we want to express love, we have to know to express it in their language.
Make notes.
So wait, notes, yeah. No. Write that down. Make notes, right. You have to write notes. I tell Hasanim, you want to get your Kala excited? Buy one rose and take a strip of long paper and write a poem on that paper or write a note on that paper, and give her a rose with entwined in a paper that has a note from you. That's going to be worth much more than any gift you give her, not gift wrap. You want to give her a gift? Don't forget the important part is the gift wrap. It's the note. It's everything that surrounds it. The same way she gave him the gift. We tend to think in our terms, and they think in their terms. When we're giving them gifts, when we want to express our love to them, we have to know to do it on their terms.
You have to be romantic, is what you're trying to say.
No, that's not what I'm trying to say. Not at all. Mm-hmm. I'm saying we should do it on their terms, and we have to know that this is a distinct difference between us.
Women like romantic things.
Another difference between men and women is in speech. There were Chasan and Kala that had to call to find out who was coming to the wedding. So they had two phones in the house. They were by her parents' house. He went down to the den, she went up to her room, she started making phone calls, he started making phone calls. After 3 hours, they meet. He comes up, he asks her, how'd you do? So she says, oh, I called three friends, I heard how they're doing, and I got answers from three friends. How'd you do? She says, I'm finished. All 150 invitations. Covered all of them. True story. What's the difference? So the Gemara says, Asara kabim shel dibur yardu la'olam. There were 10 measurements of speech that came down to the world. 9 were given to women, and 1 was given to men. That's what the Gemara says. We can understand this on another level. When men speak, so it's very practical oriented. How you doing? What'd you do today? Everything went well? Bye. End the story. Girls always make fun that they call their father and he says, everything okay? Great, here's your mother. What else do you have to talk about? And the mother is going to talk for hours. Oh, the boy sneezed today. Did you check if he has a cold? And how is it at work? Okay. What's the reasoning behind it? For men, speech is a mode of communication. What do I have to communicate? I say. What you have to communicate, you say. End of story. For women, speech is a mode of connection. Women want to talk to connect with you. I always tell Hasanim the following story. A girl comes home, and her husband he wants to read the paper, or hopefully he's better than that. He wants to do the dishes, or maybe he's even better. He wants to learn. And she says, I got to tell you what happened today. You won't believe it. See, he's a good husband. He knows that when she wants to talk to him, it's because she wants to connect with him. So he says, tell me. So she says, you won't believe it. I went to the supermarket today. And you remember the girl who was at the checkout counter? Well, now they moved her outside. Now she's collecting all the wagons. Well, anyways, I got to the supermarket, And when I walked in, you know how cold it was today? It was freezing. I couldn't believe it. But finally, I walked in and their heating was fine. Yeah, it was very, very nice. I walked into the supermarket. And you remember last week, the potatoes cost so much. This week, they were dirt cheap. Well, anyways, as I was walking by the potatoes, so I had a wagon. It was such a rackety. The wagon didn't go well. And I walked by the potatoes, and I saw my old friend, Sari. Remember, I haven't seen her in years. Well, sitting there. What's the point? He didn't say anything. He's listening. He's a good husband. He's listening. So I met Sarah. Years I haven't seen her. You remember the last time we saw her? It was at Shmuel's wedding. Yeah, she was dressed so nicely. You remember that those earrings? Yeah, they were so unique. Well, anyways, I met Sarah, and we started walking. You're all laughing. Remember this story. Remember this. I haven't had a single chassan. They don't always come back to me. But when they come back to me, this is a story they remember. Well, we were walking together, and you know how freezing it was by the frozen vegetables? We got out of there real fast. And there was that helper, Anugat, who was taking care of the fruits and vegetables. And I was walking with Sarah, and she told me what's doing and how her kids are doing. And she told me that her daughter just had a broken engagement. And as we were walking, so, you know, by the way, they had an amazing sale. An amazing sale. You know, usually, how much do we pay for yogurt? Over there, the yogurt was 4 for 10 shekel. It's amazing. Well, anyways, we were walking together, and you're laughing. You better not laugh.
She gave you a whole list of things. She didn't even come to the point yet.
He's listening. He had to hear this. He's listening. Well, we were walking down the aisles, one aisle after another, and I got so tired, and suddenly my cell phone rang. And Chaim called me from school. His principal wasn't happy with him. Well, anyways, I was walking with her. It was so embarrassing to be next to her and have the principal call. Well, anyways, and from Chaim's cell phone. So we were walking down the aisles, and it was already 2 o'clock, and I had to pick up Yossel from Gan. And I was in a rush, but I hadn't seen Sarah in such a long time. And we were walking down the aisle, and finally we finished, and we had to get to the checkout counter. And you won't believe it. You remember I bought that dress at the store. You remember the sale they had then, and you had a few minutes free, and we went to that store special for that sale. And the woman promised me there's only one dress like that. Well, there was another woman wearing the same dress. Anyways, we were standing by the checkout counter, and I didn't have the credit card. And you guys getting the story? Mm-hmm. Do I have to reach a punchline? Because there won't be a punchline. Yeah. That's the point of the story. So the guy's asking himself, what did she want? He's listening. She wanted to talk to him. That's all she wanted. She wanted to connect with him. So the average man is going to listen to that and say, so what? Huh? So don't be the average man. Be smarter. That's not the point. You have to listen and participate. And you could bring up another topic. All she wants is to connect with you. You're going to see when these conversations happen. So, no. That's a... You have to, you're building a home. So aside from the patience that we're going to discuss, every spouse has to have, here's one where you have insight. You understand what's going on. So continue. You want to tell something that happened in your day, you can hear the conversation. Listen. If after a few minutes you get the feeling there's no point there, I mean, it's just we want to connect so we could connect on other topics. There's nothing wrong. But understand that it's something positive. Chasen and Kala. They're newlyweds, 3 months into their marriage. He tells her the night before, he says, look, tomorrow my best friend's getting married. I want to be on time to the wedding. So do me a favor, I'm coming home at 4 o'clock. We're going to get ready. I'm one of the witnesses there. I have to be there on time. He's expecting me. Let's leave the house at 4:30. Everything will be fine. Fine. Comes home at 4 o'clock. He starts getting ready. And she calls him, Chaim, what necklace should I wear? I don't know, you're not dressed yet. We'll worry about the necklace later. What dress should I wear? All your dresses are beautiful. Doesn't matter. Well, but which one do you like? Your blue one's nice, your black one's nice. But which do you like? Your blue one, okay? Take the blue one. Fine. Blue one on. A second later, Chaim? Yeah. Which head covering should I wear? What do you mean, which head covering? Whatever matches to the blue dress, wear. Yeah, but do you like white with blue or black with blue? Doesn't matter, they're all fine. Whichever one's most convenient to dance with. But which do you like? The white with blue. You know, sorry, we gotta go. Yeah, I'm getting ready. Chaim, which shoes should I wear? What difference does it make? You're dancing. Whatever's most convenient. But which do you like? The blue ones. Are we going? Wait, I didn't choose a necklace yet. Which necklace? I don't know. Which necklace? What are the options? Okay, that one. Fine. Chaim, Sarah, we really gotta go. Yeah, but which earrings? Sarah, I don't understand. You can't choose earrings? You need me to choose your earrings? Choose your earrings and we gotta go. There you get to the wedding and she's all upset and he's all upset. There's a machitza in between. She goes to the women's section, he goes to the men's section. He goes over to his rabbi and he says, I don't understand her. She can't make any decisions. She calls me at work and asks me what she should make for supper. I tell her, make whatever you want. I don't care. All your food's delicious. She says, yeah, but what do you want? And I say, I don't care. Whatever you choose is good. I have to decide what's for supper. That night she asked me, what should I make tomorrow? I don't know what you should make tomorrow. So I don't answer. So the next day I get a phone call to work again. What should I make for supper? She can't make any decisions. I have to decide what's for supper. I'm on my way to the wedding. I have to decide every article of clothing she's going to wear. That's what's happening at the men's section. Yeah? You could all empathize, right? Mm-hmm. What's happening at the women's section? She goes over to the Rebbetzin and she says, I don't get it. I don't get these men. All my girlfriends are going to see me all of the wedding. He saw me a total of 2 minutes on the way here and a total of 2 minutes on the way out. That's all he's going to see me with these clothing. And I didn't care about everyone at the wedding. I only cared about him. I wanted to know, what does he like best? So I asked him. All I did was ask him, what do you like? He couldn't answer me. He has to get upset. I didn't care about anyone else at the wedding. Everyone's seeing me, friends who haven't seen me for years. And I didn't care about that. I only cared about him. He was the only one who I cared what he thought. And even though he'd only seen me for 2 minutes, he had to get upset. I know what I feel like eating for supper. I call him and I ask him, what do you want? So he has to get upset because I care for it, because I ask him what he wants. Different perspective, right? We're out of time.
No!